I was able to stand before the lectern at the Supreme Court because I have had access to the medical care that the state of Tennessee now bans. And they are making it less likely that there will be future people who will be able to step before the court because they are taking away the health care that we need.
They could agree with the state and say, you know, this is about medical care, not about sex. And in that case, it would be devastating for the plaintiffs in this case. It would be a big problem for trans health care and for in all kinds of other ways that maybe we don't even understand yet.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. The UK's trans puberty blocker ban becomes indefinite. Montana's top court stifles the state's trans pediatric healthcare ban. And Chase Strangio stands for trans rights at the U.S. Supreme Court. Those stories and more this week, now that you've chosen This Way Out.
I'm Ava Davis.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending December 14, 2024. The United Kingdom's temporary ban on puberty blockers for transgender young people will remain in force indefinitely. National Health Service caregivers will not be able to prescribe such treatment, and the same restrictions will continue for private healthcare providers. Young trans patients who are already on puberty blockers can still receive them. Patients taking puberty blockers for purposes such as early onset puberty can also continue treatment. The ban is based on April 2023's highly controversial CASS report. Now, Baroness pediatrician Dr. Hilary Cass claimed that the risks of dispensing puberty blockers and hormone therapies to trans patients under the age of 18 outweigh any benefits. Critics say that her report comes to faulty conclusions based on highly flawed research. They charge that Cass never treated a young transgender patient herself and actively consulted with anti-trans U.S. groups in preparing her report. The findings in that report were the reason the conservative British government issued a temporary ban on pediatric gender-affirming care in May of 2023. It's now virtually permanent under the succeeding Labour government. Labour's health secretary is a gay man, Wes Streeting. He told Parliament that the Commission on Human Medicines determined that treating patients under the age of 18 with puberty blockers for gender dysphoria poses an unacceptable safety risk. The ban covers England, Scotland, and Wales. The government of North Ireland is following suit. In the U.S., researchers at Yale University have concluded that the CASS report relied on highly questionable methodologies that led to suspect conclusions. They found that CASS had failed to consult with transgender people themselves, ignored pro-blocker therapy statements by other interviewees, and omitted contradictory information. Contrary to opponents, puberty blockers and hormone therapies for trans young people are reversible. Clinical trials of puberty blockers are planned for next year. Health Secretary Streeting said that officials are working with the National Health Service England to open new gender identity services so people can access holistic health and well-being support they need. He did not elaborate. Of course, the Conservative Party supports making the ban permanent. To Green Party MP Sean Barry, it's a worrying decision. To Kane Walker of the advocacy group Transactual, making the ban permanent is an unconscionable act that will have severe ramifications for a generation of trans people. She told LGBTQ Nation, "Evidence of the harm of the temporary ban continues to emerge and will grow now that it has been made permanent. Meanwhile, evidence of actual harm from the past 40 years of puberty blockers' use remains elusive."
Also in the UK, military veterans who were booted from the armed forces for being queer are now eligible for compensation. Defense Secretary John Healey told the House of Commons that those discharges were a moral stain on our nation. Service members suffered loss of their pensions and often faced barriers to employment. Even though the UK decriminalized same-gender sex in 1967, the ban in the armed forces was not lifted until 2000. Successful applicants for compensation will initially receive £50,000, have their ranks restored, and any blame or dishonor will be stricken from their service records. They may be eligible for another £20,000 if they can provide evidence of egregious treatment as a result of being discharged, such as harassment, invasive investigations, or jail time. The total comes to about $90,000. The National Audit Office counts around 4,000 potentially eligible veterans. Applications opened on December 13th. Secretary Healey said that compensation payments will begin soon into the new year.
The U.S. Supreme Court has declined to hear a challenge to a Wisconsin school district's pro-trans policies. The Eau Claire Area School District allows trans students to use their chosen names and pronouns. They may also access sex-segregated campus facilities, such as bathrooms and changing rooms, based on their gender identity. Parents or legal guardians do not need to be notified or consent to those choices. A conservative group called Parents Protecting Our Children opposed the policies. Most of its members hold religious beliefs that there are only two sexes, according to Reuters. U.S. Magistrate Judge Stephen Crocker ruled in early 2023 that the parents lacked legal standing to challenge the pro-trans policy because it had not harmed them. That decision was upheld by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit in March. The High Court rejected the parents' appeal on December 9th without comment, which is typical. However, conservative justices Brett Kavanaugh, Samuel Alito, and Clarence Thomas wanted to hear it. That's one short of the justices required to consider a case. The Supreme Court heard a challenge to Tennessee's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care in early December. It's not expected to issue a ruling on that case until June 2025.
A temporary injunction blocking the enforcement of Montana's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care will stay in place per its Supreme Court. The justices in the deep red state are the first in the country to oppose such a ban. After the Republican-dominated legislature and governor enacted the ban, a group of trans teens and their families joined two medical providers to sue the state. A lower court judge blocked the measure from going into effect in December 2023, calling it unlikely to survive any level of constitutional review. Montana's high court agreed with that analysis this week. The lower court is still considering the issue. The queer advocacy group Lambda Legal, the ACLU, and the ACLU of Montana all worked on the lawsuit. Lambda Legal's Kel Olson wrote, "Because Montana's constitutional protections are even stronger than their federal counterparts, transgender youth in Montana can sleep easier tonight knowing that they can continue to thrive for now without this looming threat hanging over their heads." Trans journalist Aaron Reed added that the Montana ruling applies regardless of what the U.S. Supreme Court does.
Finally, people in Warsaw are flocking to Queer Museum, Poland's first LGBTQ plus history museum. Its organizers believe it to be the fifth such facility in the world. Queer Museum boasts some 150 exhibits tracing the history of Poland's LGBTQ plus people dating back to the 16th century. The museum's main curator is Warszawa Lambda, the country's oldest queer organization. Poland's LGBTQ plus community is cautiously coming out of hiding since the recent elections ended the highly oppressive years-long rule of the far-right Law and Justice Party. The new government introduced legislation to create civil unions for same-gender couples in October. In November, a draft of a proposal to criminalize anti-queer hate speech was approved. This week's opening of Queer Museum far exceeded organizers' expectations. More than 100 people toured the facility on the first day. From now on, only the first 40 people queued up at the entrance will be admitted. Varsava Lambda says, "The museum is not only a place of memory, but also of research on the past and the future. It is a space full of love, memory, and pride in the heart of Warsaw."
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending December 14th, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay healthy.
And I'm Ava Davis. Stay safe.
Hi, this is Greg Louganis.
I'm Margaret Cho.
I'm John Ritchie.
This is Edmund White.
Hi, I'm Kate Quinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, this is Ian McKellen.
I'm Jerry Jewell.
I'm Stephen Fry.
I'm Harvey Milk.
Hi, this is Janice Ian.
My name's Robbie Rogers.
This is Essex Hemphill.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres.
I'm Tab Hunter.
I'm Billy Bean.
This is John Cameron Mitchell.
Hello, I'm Bruce Valange.
This is Bishop Gene Robinson.
I'm Reverend Troy Perry.
I'm Robbie Kaplan.
I'm Andrew Sullivan.
This is Augustine Burroughs.
I'm Barney Frank.
I'm Cleve Jones.
My name is Kate Kendall.
I'm Dan Savage.
I'm B.D. Wong.
This is Dorothy Alice.
I'm Patricia Nell Warren.
I'm Amanda Burst.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens, and you've discovered
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
This Way Out.
The showpiece of the homosexual movement.
The international radio show for all our sexually diverse communities.
How dare they?
And those who love them.
You ain't gonna get this nowhere else.
Oh, my.
And that's the truth.
Please do stay tuned.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
History was made in more ways than one when the U.S. Supreme Court heard a challenge to Tennessee's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care. We'll take a closer look at the trans man of the hour, but first This Way Out's David Hunt reviews the background of the case with another trans-right legal advocate.
Listening to arguments over arcane points of law can have you holding back a yawn. Listening to oral arguments in a transgender rights case streaming live from the United States Supreme Court December 4th, David Brown found himself holding back tears.
I almost cried from happiness. I'm not a trans person myself, but I've been doing trans rights law for almost 20 years at this point, and a generation ago, being transgender was, being out in transgender certainly, was almost a career death move for attorneys. There was so much discrimination, there were so many headwinds to the careers of transgender lawyers that there were very few who were out.
But one transgender lawyer was very much out on December 4th, with the traditional salutation,
"And may it please the court."
Chase Strangio of the American Civil Liberties Union made history that day as the first trans attorney to argue a case before the U.S. Supreme Court. And not just any case, a case challenging Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming health care for minors. And no, his visibility before the justices probably didn't please the court, at least not its conservative majority, as much as it pleased David Brown. Brown, former legal director of the Transgender Legal Defense and Education Fund, is not as pessimistic as some court watchers about the Tennessee case, officially titled United States versus Jonathan Skrmetti, the state's attorney general. The case involves the question of whether Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care violates the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution's 14th Amendment. It's familiar ground for the Supreme Court. Brown says there are several ways the court could resolve that issue. They might take a chapter from the 2022 Dobbs decision that struck down abortion rights by strictly narrowing the right to privacy. Brown explains.
So in a worst-case scenario, the Supreme Court, just like it did in Dobbs, could say, you know what, for the past 50-odd years, we've been wrong. We think it doesn't prohibit sex discrimination, right? We're going to revert the Equal Protection Clause to its more narrow understanding that people had in the 19th century, sort of drag the country back a couple of centuries.
That's possible, but unlikely, Brown says. Also unlikely, he believes, is the best-case scenario, a win for transgender minors and their families. So what falls between those scenarios? Tennessee argued that its law targets medical treatments and doesn't draw lines based on sex. That argument may find a receptive audience on the high court.
They could agree with the state and say, you know, this is about medical care, not about sex.
David Brown.
And in that case, although it would be devastating, I don't want to de-emphasize that. It would be devastating for the plaintiffs in this case. It would be a big problem for trans health care and for in all kinds of other ways that maybe we don't even understand yet. Nevertheless, it would mean that sex discrimination maintains validity as a basis for arguing that trans people and others, LGBTQ people, women and others, have a right to bring these cases about other things in the future.
But Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson wasn't willing to let Tennessee ignore the plain text of its own law. She questioned Tennessee Solicitor General Matt Rice on the state's conflicting arguments.
I don't know how you can say both that girls and boys are not similarly situated at step one when this law is being evaluated and it's not making a sex-based classification.
I think our position is that if you're in the point where we're treating giving testosterone to a boy with a biological deficiency as the same thing as giving testosterone to a healthy biological girl who wants to transition, then there has to be some threshold inquiry that recognizes the biological differences between those two.
When you're doing that, you're making a sex-based classification. I mean, the very argument carries with it the characterization that we're trying to identify here.
A close reading of the Tennessee law bears out Jackson's observation. In the words of the statute, this state has a legitimate, substantial, and compelling interest in encouraging minors to appreciate their sex, particularly as they undergo puberty. Will this matter to the court's very conservative majority? David Brown.
I think it's too soon to say. We know that Justice Gorsuch, who wrote an important opinion in the Bostock case, holding that transgender people have valid sex discrimination claims under Title VII, anti-discrimination law about employment in this country, he didn't say anything during the whole argument. So we don't really know what's going on in his mind. We didn't get a preview of what might be going on in his mind. And so it's quite possible he will extend his reasoning to the Equal Protection Clause. Similar, Justice Amy Comey Barrett asked a bunch of very interesting and engaged questions about the history of discrimination against transgender people and what this law actually does. So it suggests that she's thinking about the real-world impacts of this case and where the court's decision might lie in the arc of history.
The Supreme Court is expected to rule on the case before the end of the current term, in June 2025, barring intervention by the incoming Trump administration. I'd like to thank trans rights attorney David Brown for sharing his insights. Audio of the Supreme Court's oral arguments, courtesy of C-SPAN. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
And may it please the court.
The appearance of trans ACLU attorney Chase Strangio before the High Court was as significant as the U.S. versus Skrmetti case itself. Strangio spoke to the press after the conclusion of the December 4th hearings.
Today we were able to stand before this court and say the Constitution protects trans people just like it protects everyone else. It is breaking no new ground to recognize that when you are prohibited from receiving something because of your sex, that it is the role of the courts to ensure that the government can satisfy its burden of showing that it has a good reason for doing so. Tennessee did not meet their burden. This law, we believe, is unconstitutional. And perhaps the scariest thing for all of us is that Tennessee's arguments would apply if Congress tomorrow banned this care nationally for adolescents, for adults. They claim that there are no protections based on sex for the transgender people who, like myself, who rely on this medical care.
Strangio described the experience the following day on Democracy Now!
I'll sort of speak first to what it felt like in the courtroom yesterday. And the first thing I'll say is that it was incredible to have so many advocates who have worked to defend trans people for so long. And of course, notably yesterday, we were defended by the United States through the Solicitor General, who was up at the lectern for over an hour answering questions about the straightforward claims that both the United States and the private plaintiffs represented by ACLU and Lambda Legal and Akin Gump were making, which is that there is a sex-based classification in this law. It is very difficult to try to explain that away because on the face of the statute that Tennessee passed, they say you cannot have treatment when it's inconsistent with your sex. And I think one of the striking things about yesterday's argument is that the Solicitor General of Tennessee could not find his way out of that straightforward reality of the law that the Tennessee legislature passed that he was trying to defend on the ground that it was sex neutral.
The support of progressive justices Ketanji Brown Jackson, Elena Kagan, and Sonia Sotomayor stood out to the ACLU's Chase Strangio. Sotomayor and Kagan each went toe-to-toe with Tennessee Solicitor General Matthew Rice.
They cannot stand up here and say that if these alternatives were imposed, that there would be no detransitioners. So they cannot eliminate the risk of detransitioners. So it becomes a pure exercise of weighing benefits versus risk. And the question of how many minors have to have their bodies irreparably harmed for unproven benefits is one that is best left.
I'm sorry, Counselor. Every medical treatment has a risk. Even taking aspirin, there is always going to be a percentage of the population under any medical treatment that's going to suffer a harm.
And the point I think that she is making that is so important in that exchange with the Solicitor General of Tennessee is that Tennessee is getting up there and saying, we can do this because this medication carries risk. Now, the district court in this case found that Tennessee's allegations of harm and their prevalence were simply not supported by the record. But then, importantly, there is no medical intervention that does not carry risk. That is part of medicine, balancing the risks and benefits. And in all other circumstances, what Tennessee does is allow doctors and parents and then adolescent patients to weigh those risks and benefits and make a decision about what is best for the individual patient. What Tennessee has done here is displaced that thoughtful, often painstaking process that parents and their children have gone through with their doctors and imposed this one-size-fits-all prohibition. And Tennessee really did struggle to justify that sweeping ban that they passed. This was a law that was passed in 2023 at a time when almost half the country passed laws just like it. These are not homegrown, constituent-driven pieces of legislation. These are model bills that are shipped out to legislatures across the country and then rushed through supermajority legislatures that have an anti-trans objective. And what Tennessee has done is taken away the only evidence-based medical care to relieve the suffering of the adolescents who are seeking to just live their lives, whose parents are trying to support their children, whose doctors are recommending this treatment.
Can I ask you about one of the purposes of this law?
Justice Elena Kagan.
I note that your brief does not talk a lot about this, but one of the articulated purposes of this law is essentially to encourage gender conformity and to discourage anything other than gender conformity. And I'm wondering how you think that plays into the analysis.
I disagree with that characterization.
Well,
of our
encourage
law.
Minors to appreciate their sex and ban treatments that might encourage minors to become disdainful of their sex. Sounds to me like we want boys to be boys and we want girls to be girls.
If I could.
And that's an important purpose behind the law.
Let Chase Strangio elaborate on Kagan's point.
One of the features of Tennessee statute SB1 is that it has a declared purpose that the legislature spelled out in no uncertain terms of saying that in Tennessee, it is important to the government that adolescents appreciate their sex assigned at birth and that the state has an interest in banning medical treatment that could cause adolescents to be disdainful of their sex assigned at birth. And what Justice Kagan is zeroing in on here is that it is very difficult, given that, to say that sex did not play a role in this statute that the legislature passed. They are contorting words beyond recognition to try to argue that this is just a simple medical regulation. But the legislature told us clearly that it is not. It is not just about regulating medical care. It is ensuring that individuals live and look like boys and girls in the way that what that means for Tennessee. And so I think what's critical about that exchange and this feature of the law is it absolutely undermines Tennessee's claim that this is just some straightforward medical regulation. This is not a straightforward medical regulation. In fact, it has no features of a straightforward medical regulation. It categorically bans treatments only when it is inconsistent with sex and does so for the declared purpose of encouraging adolescents to appreciate their sex and preventing them from being disdainful of their sex. Whatever Tennessee may try to do to paint that as a benign purpose, it is certainly a sex-based purpose.
And what did it feel like to be the first openly transgender person to argue a case before the U.S. Supreme Court?
I was able to stand before the lectern at the Supreme Court yesterday because I have had access to the medical care that the state of Tennessee now bans. And they are making it less likely that there will be future people who will be able to step before the court because they are taking away the health care that we need. So we will keep fighting. It is an honor to be trans. It is an honor to do this work. No matter what happens, we will take care of each other and we will keep fighting.
Our thanks to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! For those excerpts from an interview with ACLU attorney Chase Strangio. Next time on This Way Out.
In the legal battle over the constitutional rights of transgender youth, playing out before the United States Supreme Court, behind the strictly tailored legal arguments are real people, young people and their families.
1 in 4 trans youth have attempted suicide in the last 2 years. And we know that that number has skyrocketed because of all of this misinformation.
David Hunt stays on the stories of transgender young people with their healthcare rights in jeopardy on the next edition of This Way Out. Thanks for discovering This Way Out. Brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Correspondent David Hunt reported from Raleigh, North Carolina. Arcade Fire, Keith Jarrett, and the Blake Projects performed some of the music you heard. And Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. We also thank the Ivana Foundation. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media. Email us at info@thiswayout.org or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts and on KHOI Ames, Iowa, WZIP Akron, Ohio, 2MCE Bathurst, New South Wales, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.